Classical music concerts have changed a lot in the last 23 years, meaning for centuries, the format was pretty much this. A two-hour concert on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon, or an evening concert, mostly on Thursday, Friday, or Saturday. Concerts were usually comprised of works from the two biggest genres, classical and romantic, and modern and Baroque music dotted the season. But these days, the formula is going through radical changes. We're seeing organizations fighting to keep their subscribers and looking under every rock for ideas to enlist new audience members. Welcome back to Accelerando. My name is Paula Tuttle, and today we're examining the rapid change in concert formats and evolving audience expectations. Used to be, the Pittsburgh Symphony could fill Heinz Hall four nights a week with a classical program that featured a soloist and a warhorse symphony alongside an overture and maybe a fourth work. Nowadays, that formula works for maybe a few concerts a season, but concertgoers expect to be promised a more exciting array of concerts. Like the series that headlines the PSO's website called Disrupt. It features the warhorses too, but they are framed with provocative descriptors like riot for Stravinsky's Rite of Spring and persistent for Shostakovich's 10th Symphony. The PSO is framing this series as less stuffy, hoping to get a younger crowd. Maybe the event seems hip, maybe even riveting. The concertgoers are promised a more relaxed atmosphere. You're invited to wear jeans, to come early for cocktails, and to expect some visual enhancements on stage. Whether these are light shows or videos, we have to wait and see. Adding visuals of any kind has become popular in some new concert formats. Videos played just before a piece with the orchestra members speaking about the music is something we've seen. Sometimes cell phones come into play with QR codes in the program. These could be for program notes, saving a lot of trees, or giving patrons a chance to donate right from their seat. But inviting people to take out their cell phones is going to end with disappointment. People are going to get sucked into their phones just when you got to put them away. Whether it's a world-class orchestra like the PSO, or a regional or even a community orchestra, the audience comes expecting a modern concert showcase. And all of these organizations are trying to create programs that engage the audience. And let's face it, audiences are becoming more fickle, easily bored, and harder to impress. The League of American Orchestras is a conference the American Symphony Orchestra managements attend each year. Last year it was in Detroit, and this year the League meets right here in Pittsburgh, with the Pittsburgh Symphony hosting the conference in June. The title of the conference is Bridging the Future, with a picture of the Pittsburgh skyline and the Andy Warhol Bridge in the forefront of the League's webpage. The attendees will have a chance to hear the PSO at least twice, and the general meeting will feature Deborah Borda. If you don't know the name, you probably should. She was president of the LA Phil before recently reestablishing herself with the New York Phil. Her accomplishments are stellar. She built Disney Hall. She recruited Gustavo Dudamel as the music director of the LA Phil, and then again with the New York Phil. Yes, she switched jobs and will take Dudamel with her after the 2025-26 season. And I've spoken about Dudamel on Accelerando before. He's a Venezuelan-born conductor and the face of El Sistema, a groundbreaking music education method and also a platform for social change, helping impoverished individuals leave their economic class by studying and performing classical music. So the blockbuster team of Bordas and Dudamel are making wholesale changes in the world of classical music, to say the very least. The attendees will be hoping to hear her tell some of her trade secrets, impart the magic of how she created remarkable growth and development in the LA Phil, and will again in the New York Phil. She'll be interviewed by the filmmaker Jamie Bernstein for the League audience. The conference will host many performances and meetings, and the visiting managers will get a chance to see Pittsburgh. But most attendees are hoping to find solutions to a list of problems and topics I've composed. At the top of my list is audience engagement. The second and third revert back to number one, diversity building and effective messaging through visuals. Audience engagement means everything that has to do with catering to the audience members' needs, desires, and the things they don't even know they want. Innovative programming, participation, greeting them at the door, the ticket buying experience, and in general, making them feel good about themselves in a myriad of ways. So in looking at the projected agenda, we see some sessions about non-classical programming, or pops concerts. Also, there's a live event with hip-hop music. And there's a PSO concert with Pittsburgh Ballet Theater dancers choreographed to Ravel's Bolero. These all look like strategies to throw a wide net to listeners that want to be entertained, but they want to get some status by attending a classy event. Because going to the symphony screams of class and status, right? Then, to entice the ultra-sophisticated patrons, there's a session about commissions and composer-led concerts. And I think that it's important to include the nerds you always courted. But the composer concerts can also focus on homegrown talent. So it's potentially a chance to snare listeners that never before attended a classical concert or recital. Speaking of nerds, there is a focus session with the CMU president about how orchestras can learn from tech startups. Also, there's a data session on demographic trends. And not to be missed, there's a tech fair with companies on hand to demonstrate their latest products and services. Then there's a session about working with the youngest audience members, because they are the future donor base and the future talent base. So a session on youth orchestras with the director of one of PSO's youth orchestras, Lindsay Nova, and Sonia Thomes, who now works in Nashville Symphony. And then there's a session that might be a humble brag. It reports the effectiveness of the League's 30-year-old report, Americanizing the American Orchestra. And the League wants to say, we got it right. Did they get it right when they called for diversification and risk-taking in programming? Obviously, yes. No spoiler needed. The conference looks like it has all the bases covered. And I'm sure it will bring into focus the real royalty in the arts world, ticket buyers. Because you can have a concert bought and paid for by a wealthy patron, but everybody wants to be in a hall where the seats are filled. And filling them is the whole ball game. If you fill them, you can get more grants, donations, and then do more concerts. Rinse and repeat. So getting back to the audience experience, we're talking about buying your tickets, getting greeted at the door, offering ways to bring your friends to events, and then the actual concert. Remember, these events are competing with all kinds of media distractions, from your phones and a million choices on Netflix and the pop-ups on social media. Andrew Goldstein is a consultant and strategist for arts organizations that are trying to snag and retain more audience members. In an article he writes about marketing for symphonic concerts, he says that the ghost of Tchaikovsky could appear at your performance, but if you can't get people in the door, it doesn't make a difference. Then he suggests that the Austin Opera has moved in the right direction by creating a senior position called Director of Audience Experience. And the goal of this person is to find a way to ensure a seamless experience for the concertgoer. And interestingly, the director of audience experience does his research by staying a week at the Four Seasons Hotel. So what will they learn? Well, for starters, audience retention and increasing patron engagement and measuring the audience experience. How do you measure audience experience? Well, go to the Four Seasons Hotel and maybe you'll find out. I'd love to stay at the Four Seasons Hotel too. But the director of audience experience has to unify the ticketing, the marketing, the education, fundraising, and the production departments. And they have to strategize a way to bring the whole organization to new levels of ticket sales and donations and audience retention. Isn't that what the president and CEO are doing? The classical music industry has been trying to make wholesale changes since the turn of the century, and maybe before. One canary in the coal mine. Selection of a music director. especially if the MD must engage the audience, giving program notes from the podium before the musicians play a work. There has been a trend toward younger conductors, especially in the U.S. Now, female conductors are finally getting more MD positions. And persons of color are surging in classical concerts as guest conductors, both in regional and world-class organizations. I played in two regional orchestras this year, one concert for each, and these are places I don't typically play, so I was a sub or a guest. And I was moved by the exceptional creativity in the programming at both of these concerts. The first one was in February. The Youngstown Symphony presented a pops concert around Valentine's Day called Blockbuster Broadway, and it featured four Broadway artists singing a selection of faves from Cats to Jersey Boys. And the show was excellent, but attendance was at 50%. The audience, at least those that came, were absolutely thrilled. The singers sang spectacularly, and just as important, the one artist acting as MC was superb at speaking to and engaging the audience. It was part stand-up and part informational, and he laid out the history of the songs or the plays they came from and told about the successes of the artists on stage. Andre Raphael, who I knew from the Wheeling Symphony when he was the MD there, guest conducted and was on his way to Boston to guest there with the BSO. Andre always brings energy to the podium as his youthful and fit frame do a full-body workout during concerts and rehearsals for that matter. But he succeeds in inspiring the orchestra and the audience alike to connect with the music. It was a delightful show. But the seats weren't filled, unlike the PNC Broadway series at the Benedum where I saw Hadestown in November. That show was completely sold out. Something went wrong in the marketing of Blockbuster Broadway. It should have had people jumping to buy tickets. And the second regional orchestra concert I played was at Wheeling's Capitol Theater. It was just last week with the Wheeling Symphony. And again, a half-filled audience and a really creative show. The Wheeling Symphony has a relatively new MD, John Devlin, who checks all the boxes for an engaging, well-received public speaker. Youthful at all of 37 years old, he's energetic, intelligent, likable, and he programs works that focus on diversity and audience engagement. The work that stood shoulders above almost anything I've seen in a decade was the piece by composer Clarice Assad about a Brazilian soccer player named Marta da Silva. Clarice came to the stage with a mic, a loop machine, and a laser pointer, and a large screen descended to inches above the conductor's head, and she proceeded to enlist the audience to participate in sound effects, call and response, and even a little solfege karaoke, as she puts it. The piece itself was rhythmically stimulating, beautifully written, and she performed a lot of very impressive vocals that the loop machine distorted in very funky ways. As far as I can tell, the MD hit a home run with the programming, and from a personal standpoint, he prepared the orchestra exceptionally well. The closing hit was Stravinsky's Firebird, but once again, even if Tchaikovsky's Ghost or Stravinsky's actual Firebird descended on the stage, the concert will always be evaluated by the seats that are getting filled. It's the hardest job for a regional organization. Is it harder for them, or are the bigger organizations just better at it? Probably some of both. Wheeling and Youngstown Symphonies and regional orchestras are all in the same boat as the big leagues. And maybe someone will get to stay at the Four Seasons when the board realizes they need a new strategy for audience building and retention. In the case of the Wheeling Symphony, which I did play regularly in another decade, it has so much history with the Capitol Theater. The story goes that the builders of the Grand Ole Opry's first pick was Wheeling because of the Jamboree. But for some reason, they moved to Nashville to build their legacy. That might be a little folklore, or it might be true. But it does tell a story of how culture evolves. The hall went through a restoration in 2009, and like the Benedum Theater, originally opened in 1928. I hope they find a way to make that a draw for their future concertgoers. These music halls are like gems to our culture. As you know, I always encourage supporting live music events. You can make it a date night or a night with your friends, but keep going to symphony concerts. Because you know what the song says, you don't know what you've got till it's gone. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sharing this episode. And please go to the show notes at accelerandocast.com to find out more about the symphonies, these organizations, and the articles I mentioned in the show. Have a great week. I'll see you next time.